Welcome to Mama Beaties, a podcast for women with type 1 diabetes by women with type 1 diabetes. Join us every Thursday as we navigate through pregnancy, birth, and raising a child whilst living well with type 1 diabetes. The experiences shared on this podcast are not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice and should not be relied on as health or personal advice. Please seek the guidance of your treating team before making any changes to your diabetes or pregnancy care. Today we're talking about the postpartum experience with type 1 diabetes, how our bodies were impacted, what we did to care for ourselves and our babies whilst juggling our diabetes, any challenges we face, and our recovery after birth. Today your hosts are Ash, Carly and Rachel, and this is Mama Beaties.
Woohoo! We are all here together for the first time in a long time. So postpartum, had to clarify with the ladies tonight, because when you hear the word postpartum, I don't even really know what that means in terms of like a time frame or like what it involves, because I think it means something different to everybody. But just for clarification, when we talk about postpartum today, we are talking about like the fourth trimester, that 3 months post baby's birth. So that's the kind of time that we're looking at. And I think I'm just going to kick off with a very broad umbrella question. Overall, before we get into the nitty gritty, how did you ladies feel about your postpartum experience? Ashley, I'm going to like target on you.
Oh, I felt ripped off. So like, you know, everybody kind of talks about it and they're like, oh, you know, your baby just does a lot of like breastfeeding and sleeping, and everybody talks about how they could watch like 50 million seasons of their favorite show and that's all they did. And I just feel like that didn't happen for me. Like I had a lot of challenges postpartum, so I think I spent like most of my time going to doctors and trying to get what issues were going on with me and with my baby sorted, so I just didn't have that relaxing kind of bonding time with my baby. I really hated that postpartum period. And by the time that it finished, I went back to work at 3 months postpartum. So when I started to finally feel like I was getting into the swing of things, I was like, okay, back to work.
Oh, I'm sorry.
How about you guys?
I'm sorry to hear that it wasn't what you expected or wanted.
I think I was expecting that like bonding kind of, but like when we get into the nitty gritty, it'll kind of explain why.
What about you, Rachel?
Yeah, I can definitely relate to Ash. I felt so unprepared. I had no idea what I was going into. And it kind of all just hit me at once. And I think coming out from having a birth situation with the emergency caesar and things, that was pretty traumatic for me at the time, and I hadn't really had a chance to really process what had happened, to be thrown into this time frame where, yeah, a lot of people were saying, oh, it's the most amazing time, it's the best, like you hear all these people going, oh, it's the best time of your baby. For me, I was so mentally vulnerable at that time. I felt like I was just on edge the whole time. I had a whole heap of health concerns, which we'll talk about later, but it was just a really scary and daunting time for me, and I don't think I got to appreciate parts of it because of just everything I was trying to process at the time. Yeah.
Guys.
Is yours different, Carly? I think yours is different.
Yeah, look, I guess I'm one of the lucky ones, in that I had with Isabel a very cookie cutter experience. I had a really good experience postpartum. I didn't face any real challenges. Everything, I spent, you know, 5 months with her before I went back to work, and like it almost sounds like rude to say it, but I had a really great postpartum.
No, I don't think that's rude.
And with Noah, it was much the same. Tougher because there was obviously a slightly older baby to deal with, but, you know, 9 months off with Noah, and it was good. I didn't really face any challenge except for the fact that my son pooed all the time because he couldn't have milk. Like that's my only complaint that no one tells you about. But yeah, look, I had really good experiences, and I don't feels like bad to say it.
No. I think it's important to show that everyone has different experiences,
and like maybe next time we'll get a better experience.
Yeah
And like, look, it isn't what I expected as well in some ways, but it definitely wasn't kind of, I don't know. We'll get into it more. So overall, we've had some not great times and a kind of time. So I want to kind of start off immediately. How was your recovery after birth? Now I'm gonna go both of you first, A, because I'm leading it and I can, but B, because you guys had some pretty hectic births. Rachel, as the one of us who labored like a champion and then still went into a Caesar, how was your recovery after birth?
I haven't really been prepared much for what to expect from an emergency Caesar, even to the fact of when I left the hospital, I had a special type of bandage on that's connected to this like little electrical device, I think it is. Oh, I can't remember the name of the exact thing, but it was to help keep moisture out from my C-section incision. It was like this fancy thing. And I had no idea what it was. And I was like, okay, I've got this other thing attached to me. Okay. And I didn't find out what it was until I got my checkup at the doctor after a week from being at the hospital. But I just thought, okay, there's something else. But the recovery after birth, so I think I was very, very lucky in that I was surrounded by family during that. So, I mean, it's not the best circumstances, but because my late father-in-law was, he was in late stages of terminal cancer at that stage, family was always around at my in-laws' house where we were living. So there were always people around to help and support. And we're very lucky that my husband was able to have 6 weeks off work. So for those 6 weeks where I couldn't drive couldn't lift up heavy things, I had constant support around. So I think my recovery was able to happen in those first 5 to 6 weeks, enough that I could kind of get on my feet to be able to take care of Will on my own once everyone was kind of up and away back with their normal work lives and things like that. So, yeah, I would say it's all thanks to having a really good family support network that I was able to have a reasonably good recovery time.
Well, that's good.
I'm glad you had that support. I'm glad that Ray was able to take that 6 weeks off. Did he originally have the 6 weeks planned to take off, or did he ask for extra once you had your emergency C-section?
I'm just trying to remember. I'm pretty confident he asked for extra once we had the emergency Caesar, but at the same time, it was when his dad's cancer had gotten quite worse, so he wanted to be there for me but also there for his dad, so he was able to put the request in. School was fine with it, so I think originally we had planned just a couple of weeks, but then once everything happened, he's like, no, I'm gonna ask for more. And even though it was unpaid, it was absolutely the right decision for us to do, to spend that precious time as a family.
That's so good. What about you, Ash, with your birth?
How was my recovery from birth? So I did have a 3A tear during birth, which I didn't think much of at the time. But then when I got home and while I was in hospital, I guess, it kind of was obvious that it was a bit more than just like a little bit of stinging or whatever down below. So I wasn't able to sit for any real length of time, which kind of made like having Adeline hard, because it would just be like I'd just get incredibly sore really quickly and would be unable to sit. So I also wasn't able to drive and things because of that, because just every movement just felt like I was going to rip myself apart again. So it was a bit difficult, and Hugh went back to work after 2 weeks, so I had to kind of like just get over it, and I guess I didn't rest. That you're supposed to rest the area for like 6 weeks. So they basically tell you to treat a tear like you've had a Caesar, and you're not supposed to do any heavy lifting or driving or anything for 6 weeks, but Hugh didn't have that amount of time off, so I just had to do it. And so the tear took a lot longer to for me to recover than it should have. And I spent a lot longer going back to the Oasis clinic than I should have, because I just didn't have that time to devote to healing properly. I also had endometritis, which is a uterus infection. So I had that kind of the first symptoms of that flared up around 10 days postpartum, and I went to the birth assessment center, which is where you can go for up to 6 weeks postpartum, and they gave me some antibiotics and sent me home, and then it just continued. So I had endometritis for my entire 3 months maternity leave. So for me, that was probably the big thing, because I was bleeding heavily the whole time. I bled heavily for 3 months, which is part of endometritis. I felt sick. I did a total of 10 rounds of antibiotics, two of which were IV antibiotics. I ended up having to have a D&C hysteroscopy to check for retained placenta products, because I passed some product that looked like it could have been placental products. There was none when she went in and had a look, but she said to me, "Your uterus is the most infected uterus I've ever seen." And she was supposed to fit a copper IUD to help prevent Asherman syndrome. So when you've got endometritis, Asherman syndrome is something that can happen because of that, and it basically will fuse your uterus together, is how she explains it. And she said it would be very difficult to have another pregnancy. So she couldn't even fit the copper IUD to prevent Asherman syndrome, because she said your uterus is so infected that the copper IUD would just, there's a risk that it would tear through your uterus. So I was really sick for 3 months. And for me mentally, that was a huge challenge, because I took so many courses of antibiotics that I began to think that it would never end, and I began to prepare to die, basically. So I was leaving like notes on how to care for Adeline and stuff, because I was like, will I even, like, what happens if they can't clear this infection? Is it just going to kill me? Like, what's going to happen? Like, I was completely not able to cope with what was happening, basically.
Wow.
So it was really, really shitty postpartum period. And that's what happened. And then eventually the last round of IV antibiotics that I got kind of kicked it, which was good.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
I just, like, need to take a second. Like, that was just, I didn't realize that all that happened to you.
I didn't talk about it a whole lot, because I just couldn't deal with it, and because I was so stressed about it, and it was just so hard to even get medical attention. Like, the hospital just kept fobbing me off, and they just basically didn't care that it was happening. So it wasn't until I got I had to end up going to a private obstetrician to finally get somebody to listen to me.
And, like, going on a slight tangent, like, infections in a person with diabetes are, like, nothing to bat an eyelid about.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. It's why I had to have my gallbladder out, because I had an internal infection, and they were like, we can't see this, so we're just getting rid of it, because we can't risk you getting another infection internally. Here you are on 10 rounds of antibiotics, like, oh, you'll be right, like, let's just keep pumping you full of antibiotics. Like, that just... heart is just hurting. Like,
and antibiotics aren't good. Like, they caused so, you know, as a diabetic woman, you're already susceptible to things like thrush and stuff, especially that postpartum period where you've got, like, your hormones are crazy, and so your blood sugar's crazy. So I ended up with, like, the worst case of nipple thrush because of all those antibiotics.
Okay, okay. We will keep going. Look, my afterbirth recovery was pretty standard. I had two planned cesareans, so I wasn't exhausted like poor Rachel of having to have gone through a full labor for a like crazy long time as well.
Mind yeah, it was like 30 something hours.
Like, wasn't like I labored for like an hour or something, and then like, no, let's do this. So I had two planned Caesars that went surgically very well. My recovery the first time round, a bit like you, Ashley, Drew had to go back to work after 10 days. So there was no 6 week holding period for me on things driving and stuff, because there just couldn't be. I probably didn't drive for maybe 2.5 weeks. I do live quite close to the center of town, so I was able to walk most places, but you know, weather was bad and I needed to get out of the house or whatever, I did drive. You are allowed to drive. I just want to point that out too. When you have a scissor, it's just not, you're not covered by insurance if you have an accident before 6 weeks. Just FYI, before somebody jumps down my throat about driving before 6 weeks. So it all went really well. The surgeon was incredible. The midwives kept talking about how like perfect my incision was, and how they couldn't believe how like neat it was and stuff like that, and how neat it sealed, and it was all really good. I didn't have any infections or anything like that. I just had a baby that was so eager to eat that she'd like latch before she actually latched properly, so it felt like she was gonna rip my nipple off initially, and we like figured out how to make her stop doing that and actually get on the boob properly. And I guess the same thing with Noah. I had the same surgeon who was able to use the exact same incision because he'd done it so well the first time, which apparently was a thing that they all kept talking about. Like, oh, my God. So I have, like, yeah, I have a perfect scar for the love of a better. Like, that's what everyone described. So it was so neat and tidy the first time that he literally just went from one end of my scar to the other. He didn't have to go past it at all. And my recovery the second time round, I think it went faster because it just had to, because I had an 18-month-old and she required attention. So there was
she couldn't run.
She could run fast. And she thought it was fun to run fast too. So I drew for 5.5, nearly 6 weeks with Noah, just because of how time went. When Noah was born, we got carer's leave because of the cesarean. Whilst it was planned, it happened like when we expected it to. But so we had that time, then we had holidays, then Drew took his paternity leave at half pay, and through a realm of things, I had Drew for 5.5 weeks, which was just amazing, because especially in that early 6 weeks of having the two kids, I did have Drew there for a lot of it. And it made me feel a lot more confident to have the two kids when he went back to work and stuff like that. And, yeah, I did get to rest the second time like I did the first time. I think I was able to do things like drive after 2.5 weeks with Isabel because I did that ridiculous sleep when the baby sleeps things, or at least rest when the baby sleeps, which I didn't get to do the second time around. But I think, like, strangely enough, my recovery the second time was, like, fast and better. But I don't know whether that was just, like, a mind over matter thing where I was like, you've just got to be able to do this. So it's just going to happen. I willed it into existence. But, yeah, I think that I was expecting, and this sounds silly, but I was expecting there to be a lot more difficulties than there was. Because all I heard prior to having my kiddos was, like, how hard diabetes makes, which it does, it makes everything hard, but like particularly how hard it makes a postpartum experience with things like breastfeeding and like, you know, surgery recovery and all that kind of stuff. And I think I was expecting like this Hiroshima-sized problem when it, for me, it just wasn't. So maybe I was pleasant, like, because I like worked it up in my head that it was going to be a terrific experience, and then it wasn't. I was like, oh, this was actually quite good. Like, maybe I'm thinking it was better than it was because I was expecting the absolute worst, if that makes sense. But going from our recoveries, what do you guys, how do you guys think birth impacted your body? Now, I know before someone like laughs at me saying that out loud, obviously birth impacts your body. That is just a fact. But how, because I have things that happened to my body that I was not expecting to happen, but like, how did your birth affect your body in ways that you expected and also maybe did not expect? I can see like everyone's like thinking about this question, not that anyone else who's listening can see what I can see, but yeah, we're all thinking about this question. So do either of you ladies want to start?
I have a list so I can go.
Go for Rachel.
I wrote a list because I was like, oh, do I remember what happened? And then it kind of all came flooding back and I was like, oh God, yeah, okay. So for me, I think maybe two of these were ones that I expected and then the rest are all unexpected. So we'll start with the expected. I expected exhaustion because, yeah, hello, went through labor, then emergency C-section. I knew I was going to be tired. And I also knew that I had my C-section scar healing to worry about. So they're probably the expected ones. Unexpected wise. So we had the night sweats. In the middle of winter, I mean, we was born in May and we went into winter and I was having night sweats for about, the first 3 months or so. It took a while to settle down and I wasn't really expecting it. And then once it started happening, I did a Google, I sort of thought, oh, okay, yeah, there's that to look forward to. Now, I also, because of how long my recovery in hospital was from being on the, having the epidural, because they kept me in bed for 24 hours after, or was it, it was about 36 hours after that I was in bed, but I actually developed bed sores because I was unable to move. So because of that, I also got infections. So I had that extra sort of care and maintenance where they had to have dressings while I was also taking care of the dressings for my C-section scar. I had to come off blood pressure medication because I had mild hypertension. And when I was coming off it, I was getting kind of the shakes, and I was getting lightheadedness happening as well. Because now my blood pressure was fine since giving birth, but they needed me to gradually come off the tablets. So there was that shakiness as well, which is it's a horrible combo when you're tired as well, because I get shaky when I'm tired too. Plus blood sugar's going crazy and everything. So it was that. And then hair loss for me. I didn't get heaps of hair growth happening during pregnancy, but apparently I did because then I started to lose it like crazy from about 6 weeks onwards, just everywhere. And I thought it was unexpected because I thought I had missed it. I thought, oh yeah, awesome, cool, I haven't lost any hair. And they just all happened at once.
Wake up and hair everywhere.
Chunks everywhere. And I didn't realize how bad it was. And then, we were having a quick chat about this earlier, but it took up to a year for hair loss to stop happening for me. And then the baby hair growth took another year pretty much to settle into hair. But I mean, the main unexpected ones for me, mental health, just how much my mental health was impacted and mood swings as well. So that, I mean, it's kind of body, but it's kind of like, you know, it's your mind. That was the biggest impact that birth really had on my body. And my mood swings were just insane for the first 12 weeks. And to add to that, I didn't realize how much my boobs would hurt. I thought it was just, I was like, oh yeah, people are just like, oh yeah, your boobs will hurt. And
it will
oh,
be dramatic.
Yeah, and like your boobs will get rock hard if you don't pump or if you don't feed. And then like the first time it happened to my boobs, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're like stones. So they're the main things.
Oh well, I'm gonna like just jump straight on that boob thing because that was the worst.
Yeah,
like that was the worst, and I agree. People said that they like get hard, they'd hurt, and you're like, yeah. And like first time, you kind of go a little bit longer between feeding, and they get a bit hard, or like between pumping or whatever. And you're like, oh, I know what they're talking about. And then like the baby sleeps through the night for the first time.
Yeah.
holy crap. I felt like my skin that was like gonna pop my nipple off.
Yes.
Like that, I like stretched it. Anyway, that was the worst I've ever experienced. It was worse than the cesarean, was the boob pain afterwards. Look, I think that my body didn't know what to do with itself. Like once there wasn't a human in it anymore, which was the strangest thing for me. Like I, and so stupid, like this is how dumb I was. I just expected like my body to go back to the way it was, like not straight away. Like I wasn't that dumb, but I definitely expected by like the third kind of month postpartum that my body would be like reasonably back to the way it was, and it's still not. And what am I like from my first pregnancy? I'm 3.5 years postpartum and my body is still not what it was like then versus now. I like, let's just go through the very basic things of like, everything droops in areas that it didn't droop before, or things now in places that they didn't go before. And like, I know that people kind of tell, like people tell you that that's going to happen, like especially when you breastfeed a baby and things like that, like they tell you it's going to happen, but you just don't believe them, or you don't quite believe them enough. Like believe part of it, but you don't believe the whole thing. Like, I think that the biggest thing that happened to my body, that I wasn't expecting, was the negative relationship that I now have with my body, considering my body has given me 2 incredibly healthy and beautiful little children. Like, I've never had a great relationship with my body. I know we talked about it last season when we had Georgie on. I've never had a great relationship with my body for a number of reasons, but I did not anticipate the level of, I'm going to use the word hate, I would have for a body that kept me and 2 little humans well. And it's still something that I'm dealing with, and it's something that I really, that's not something anyone ever talks to you about when they talk about your postpartum or your like post-pregnancy body, and when it comes to recovery and healing. Like, we talk about cesareans, or we talk about like a tear, like we talk about those big kind of major events during birth, but it's like I am still dealing with my body now in a way that is not healthy, I think, in the way that I look at myself. And that is purely because of what my body did, or what, sorry, how my body changed due to pregnancy and birth. For something as simple as like, I have a pretty decent sized scar on my body now. My cesareans were my first surgery ever. And like when I recently had my gallbladder out, I didn't even think of my cesareans being a surgery though. That was the other big thing. When they're like, have you had previous surgeries, filling that out? I was like, no. Oh, wait. Yes, I have. I've had 2 major surgeries. Like, but like, as simple as, I know some women look at their cesarean scars and they're like, that's how my baby came into the world. And I'm, what is that thing that is on my body now that was never there before? So I'm going to leave it at that. But that's the thing that impacted me and my body post-birth that I was not expecting.
Look, I think I agree with the body image stuff. Like, I'm still wearing my pregnancy pants. It's a lot. Like,
if I still don't know button-up jeans. Like, and I haven't worn jeans in 4 years.
Yeah, and I guess I expected that you would kind of like be able to go back to your pre-pregnancy clothes, but nothing fits the same way anymore. Like, I feel like my chest and my shoulders are broader. Like, it's not like, you know, you kind of expect that your boobs get bigger, but when you imagine that, it's like that your boobs are like nice and round and just bigger but not like corn that they're like wider and like they do not look like my boobs anymore. I would definitely agree with that. What impacts did birth have on my body? Can we talk about continence?
Oh my god. Yes. How did I forget about continence?
Yes, it was like I'd done my pelvic floor religiously throughout pregnancy, like multiple times a day, all pregnancy, even before I was pregnant, I was doing pelvic floor because that's what everybody says to you, do your pelvic floors. And so I kind of was like, I've done my pelvic floors, I'll be fine after pregnancy. I peed myself several times after I had Adeline. Like, it was awkward. Like, I couldn't make it to the bathroom in time. And so I was, like, lucky, I guess, that I was wearing these period pads for these postpartum pads for so long, because they soaked up the pee.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to go to the Oasis clinic, and they're like, how are you going with continence? So you go to the Oasis clinic after you have a tear, and they're like, basically assess you for all of the things that tears can cause. And they're like, how are you going with your continence? So I was like, oh, I'm peeing myself before I can get to that. Like, as soon as I think about going to the toilet, like, that's it, I'm done. And so I had to, like, learn all these strategies to be able to make it to the toilet on time. And even now I still have to, as soon as I get the urge to pee, I have to think of a number, like a really high random number, pick a number to count down by. So I'll be like 453 counting down by 17. And I have to count back in lots of 17 as I walk to the toilet so I don't pee myself.
Wow.
And that's how I get to the toilet on time.
Oh my God. How did I know this?
That's the thing with a tear, apparently. So it's a lot better than it was. I don't pee myself anymore, but I still have to count backwards, or I still have to have some kind of random thought train going on to get me to the toilet on time.
Far out. Wow.
Which means that I have to make sure I go for a toilet before I go for a walk or something, because I can't be on a walk and all of a sudden realize that I need to go to the toilet.
Well, toddler, that's what I have to do with Isabel. Like, we have to go to the toilet now because it's not going to be a toilet when we're going somewhere. Like, you and Adeline will be fine together when you start.
Exactly. I'll be like, Bobby has to go to the toilet. Do you need to go to the toilet?
If we're talking incontinence, I might add one thing. I wasn't going to add it, but I guess it may be TMI, but let's add this, especially if you've had a C-section, constipation, especially in those first couple of weeks out. So if you have a C-section, you're put on a lot of meds to help with pain and recovery as well, things like Endone and stuff like that.
Same for a tear.
And a tear. Yep. It can clog your system up quite a bit. And for me, first bowel movement took, once I got home, 5 days. And, like, this is after being in hospital and, like, everything, the system working normally.
Did they give you, like, Movicol and stuff? Did they send you home on that? Because I got sent home on that kind of stuff.
Nope, I got nothing. And I went home, and after being at the hospital and the pipes working fine there, coming home and everything just coming to a halt. And I had no idea what to do. So I found Movicol. I started having prune juice. I started having fennel seeds blended up as a tea, because apparently that helps in things. And literally, yeah, it was 5 days. And I was in, like, I felt so sick for those 5 days. But it's just something to keep in mind if you are put on strong pain meds, is that they will clog up your system. And I just had no idea what was going on.
Or you can be like me and be on metformin, and that just, like, shreds your insides.
That's true.
So you go, like, hardcore to the toilet all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't experience that because I didn't take the pain meds for personal choice, because I don't like how they make me feel. So I was lucky that I avoided. But when you talk about continence, so I had HG, or close to HG, with Noah. I just spewed for 9 bloody months. So that was really fun after having a baby and not having great continence, because basically any time I spewed, I peed myself, and I couldn't do anything about it. Like, no matter how hard I, like, squeezed, or, like, no matter what I did, whenever I was hurling my entire insides up, thanks to Noah, I basically had to, like, at home, I just stripped off to spew if I had the time, because otherwise I had to change anyway, because I just peed myself, which was the worst.
Oh, man.
Isabel thought it was hilarious. Like, thought it was the funniest thing in the world. So did my husband for a while there. He thought it was quite funny. But, like, I also didn't expect the continence thing, because I had seizures. Like, I don't know why, but nobody kind of talks to you about the, like, impact that a cesarean still has on your body, like, in terms of continence and pelvic floor and things, because, I don't know, I guess I just expect, because I didn't actually have to push a baby out of my hoo-ha, like, my hoo-ha would be all right. But it wasn't. because I had two huge babies pushing right down on my hoo-ha, and they stretched things out. And I still don't have amazing continence. It's gotten much better. I'm much better at my pelvic floors now. I thought I was good during pregnancy, but I clearly was not. But yeah, I think that's important to remember that even if you are having a planned cesarean, like, your pelvic floor and all your continence is going to be impacted. Like, even if you don't labor and you don't push and all that kind of stuff. Because that was another thing I didn't expect, was that my continence would be impacted when I didn't actually push a baby out.
Yeah.
I love our bodies. I'm so
weird. You guys get stretch marks after you had your kids? I didn't get any stretch marks during pregnancy. I was like, sweet, I missed out on the stretch marks. This is amazing. Yeah. And now I'm still getting extra stretch marks. And I'm like, excuse me, we've had the baby. Stop getting stretch marks.
Yeah.
That was me. And I thought the same thing. I was like, yes. Like, I got it all the way through. I didn't have a single, like, not even my boobs, like, nothing. Not a mark.
Oh, okay. I got them all over my boobs in pregnancy, which sucked. Mm. But, like, didn't get any on my belly or anything. But I just keep getting them now.
Not a mark. And then I remember the day after Isabel was born, I, like, looked at my stomach for the first time. And I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Like, what is this rubbish? But I have those, like, silvery ones. Like, I know some people have, like, quite vibrant.
Well, mine are silvery as well. But.
Yeah, some people have quite vibrant stretch marks. I don't have vibrant stretch marks. I've got those really faint, like, almost ribbony.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, look, I'm not going to complain because I can take my clothes off and not really see unless I'm looking for them. Mm. But you can feel them. I think that was a weird thing too. Like, I didn't realize that's what stretch marks, like, literally, like, divots in your skin.
Yeah.
Because I've never had stretch marks before. But I can actually feel them, which was a strange thing.
I just find it hard to, like, place pump sites now around them because I think you're not supposed to put a pump site through them. And so now I'm kind of like, because they've just appeared, they've appeared all over my hips, which I had some there before pregnancy, but they didn't get any worse during pregnancy. But, like, postpartum, like, wasn't even the day after. It was, like, literally weeks after I gave birth that I started getting stretch marks, which was so weird.
And, like, such a jip.
I know.
Give me stretch marks when I'm pregnant. You'll be like, oh, no, I have a baby inside me. Sorry, I've got stretch marks, not when the baby's out.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have kind of covered this, but let's get, like, right into it. The challenges that you guys face, because, like, I'm going to straight up be honest, didn't really face many challenges at all, except for, like I said, the initial trying to get Isabel to latch, which was rectified in, like, 2.5-3 days. I feel bad. I don't have a lot to contribute to this, but I know that so many women
do face a lot of challenges. Don't feel bad about that. Stop apologizing.
But, like, yeah, the challenges that you guys face, let's kind of flesh those out a little bit. Ashley, what? Let's talk about you. Let's talk about you and Adeline. What do you think was the biggest challenge, like, in your postpartum recovery time that you faced, and how did you face?
I think it was the psychological impact of having that endometritis for so long and just not, you know, I just felt sick. I had an infection, so I felt sick the whole time and just, like, I just felt like it was never going to end. Like, when you have 10 rounds of antibiotics and the doctors just don't seem to care, your mind just goes to really dark places. And I found it really impacted on my ability to bond with Adeline because I just didn't feel like I'd be able to be there. And I was having anxiety attacks, like, every day. Like, I just have panic attacks thinking, like, I can't get rid of this infection. Like, infections are not a good thing to have for this amount of time. Like, I had so much trouble trying to process that and balance a newborn and balance my diabetes. Like, it was just too much at once to kind of, like, know how to deal with it.
I am going to jump in here because I know where this kind of section of our episode is going to go. And I just want to tell our listeners that Ashley and Rachel are going to do a fourth trimester mental health episode specifically. because we all agree it's super important and it needs its own time. So I just want to point that out now, because Ashley's obviously talking about mental health side of recovery, and Rachel, I know you're going to talk about the same thing, which I'm so incredibly sorry that you guys experienced, and I'm incredibly proud to know you people who have gone through this and are happy to talk about it. But I just want to put that out there, that if you are listening and it is something that you're waiting to hear about, we are going to briefly go over it in this episode, and we are going to give it its own dedicated time.
Hear all about it in the dedicated time.
Yeah, exactly. Because it needs its own time. It's not something that we can just like answer in amongst a bunch of other questions. Yeah. So Rachel, what about you? What do you think is your biggest challenge, and like how did you face that?
It was definitely my mind was the biggest challenge in that time, and I was living so much in my head, because like looking back in hindsight, I had a baby that was fantastic during those 12 weeks. Like there were no issues with Will during that time. I mean, he had a little bit of not reflux, but he was there were some nights where he was a bit fussy, but he was a pretty good baby for those 12 weeks looking back. But I just going through the birth I wasn't expecting and just being thrown into something that I just didn't feel prepared for. I just felt like the worst mother. I constantly was just feeling very full of dread, and at the same time very anxious over Will. So he had his little baby bouncer, and I would basically just sit in front of that baby bouncer and I wouldn't go anywhere for 12 weeks basically. I was just there with Will in our lounge room, not going anywhere because I was too scared to go out. I was very scared about leaving the house. I was very scared about other people taking care of Will. I barely showered for the first 12 weeks just because I was too afraid of leaving Will. I felt like I hadn't bonded with him well. And I remember something that really got me through that time. I remember saying this to my doctor, because I spoke to my GP and I got some really good treatment, which we'll talk about in the other episodes. But I just remember saying to him, oh, if only I could see my son smile, that would make such a difference to me. And then when he did smile, and I think about 10 weeks, it was from there on that things started to get better for me. But just that time frame where a baby doesn't really communicate with you well at that stage, you know? And I'm someone who, you know, I'm doing a PhD. I'm someone that's come from a background where I like getting that acknowledgement for things, like, so I know that I'm doing a good job. Yeah. And I wasn't getting any feedback, and that was really impacting me. And if you're someone that's come from, you know, like a high achieving background, if you're someone that takes pride in your work in academia, that can be really bloody hard. You don't get any feedback back from a baby as to how you're doing. And
I still don't think I get feedback from my children except that I don't give them snacks enough. Like,
That's it. But, yeah, I was my biggest enemy at that point. And I'm very glad that I acknowledged that, and my family were supportive and I got extra help during that time, because, yeah, that was definitely the biggest challenge.
I can only imagine, because I can't, I'm not able to relate, and I just feel for you guys, because I guess for me, when I hear you, Rachel, say like you didn't feel like you bonded with Will and things, like my heart just hurt, because of course you bonded with Will. Like, he just loves you. I see him like everywhere on my socials, just loving on you, and he's just the most happiest, most beautiful, rounded kid I've ever seen. Like,
oh, he totally is, yeah.
With his little like nappy whites box on his head yesterday, like that just made me so happy. It was like, that is my son to a T. Like,
yeah.
We got Noah had our Hello Fresh box on his head like at the same time, and I almost did the same photo. Like,
yeah.
And yeah, just yeah, like it's just one of those, it's, I'm not trying to be like, oh, you guys are making me sad, like me. Like I just feel for you guys, because I had a really nice time, and I that you didn't have a nice time. And I hope that you do have another nice time at another time, because
yeah, like don't get me wrong, like, this hasn't put me off not having more kids. Like I'm like, okay, I know what to expect for next time now. And luckily, I did have the online diabetes community, but Baby Beyond, to reach out to, so I got that assurance there. So it hasn't put me off having kids, and I hope this doesn't put people off having kids either. Like it's totally, you can find the support and you can find the things to get through it. Absolutely.
I think it has put me off having kids. So I'm going to be that person that just says that. Like, I was terrified during my first 3 months. And just because, I couldn't get rid of that infection, I just didn't know what was going to happen. And I just, like, every time I think of that first 3 months, I'm like, I don't want to go back there ever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and, like, that's so frustrating that, like, really that your healthcare has given you a negative experience. Like it's not the infection didn't give you a bad experience. It's the fact that your infection wasn't dealt with properly, or you didn't feel listened to in regard to it. Like I'm sure that many women get infections post-birth for one reason or another, and like get treatment and then it's fine, like it goes away and they get listened to. But I'm sure that, and I mean, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure, like, it sounds like your issue is not with the infection, but with
the doctors who basically at the birth assessment center just here, have 5 days worth of antibiotics, go see your GP for your next round kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like that was frustrating that I wasn't being listened to, and I asked them the second time that I presented with passing a huge clot. Which was 5 weeks postpartum, the second time I presented and said, I've still got this infection. Can you do a hysteroscopy D&C? And they started working me up for one, but they couldn't get a cannula in. And so instead they said, go home, have another round of antibiotics. Like that was their solution to, we can't get a cannula in, we just won't treat you.
Unbelievable.
So I did write in. It took me months, and I would say that if you have had a similar experience, if your doctors haven't done the right thing by you, write in, like let them know, give feedback and let them know that they haven't done well enough. Mm. Because as I wrote in and said to them, I hope that no other woman ever has the experience that I had. Like I want them to have a better way of dealing with endometritis. If women present, look at it properly. If women present twice, I presented twice, look at it properly. Don't just fob them off.
It's such a big, like obviously advocacy, self-advocacy is like, I feel like the flag that, that you fly. But I am super proud to know you, because I had a really like poor experience with my gallbladder surgery, and I have done the thing that you have just said. I wrote in, I got things happened, but I wouldn't have been able to do that without you and your like flag flying that I've taken away from this podcast. So I completely agree with you in that any woman who is going through a negative pregnancy, post-pregnancy, postpartum experience,
post-gallbladder experience.
Yeah, but that's it. Like it has fallen into other areas of my life, and I previously would have just been like, oh, that was crap. Oh, well, move on. But it's not good enough, especially when diabetes is so dangerous. Like when it comes to things like infection and it comes to management, like in my gallbladder surgery, my diabetes was mismanaged out the wazoo. And one day I'll talk about that somewhere else. And it wasn't okay. Like I couldn't just go home and let it happen to somebody else. Just like I couldn't just let this happen to somebody else. And I guess that brings us now to the whole point of why we have the podcast. Is how does this all relate to diabetes and the management of our diabetes and the management that our diabetes has over our lives? So opening the floor for statements, questions, queries, smart remarks, as teachers say, do you feel that diabetes affected your postpartum recovery, or that do you think your postpartum recovery affected your diabetes? poorly, positively, just kind of open that up to the floor.
So my diabetes did, I felt, you know, when I was in that postpartum period, that I didn't have a grasp on it at all and that it was spinning out of control. And I think that was, you know, because I was dealing with so much. So we had a baby who had bottle preferencing for the first month. So in the mix of everything else that's going on, I'm also trying to get my baby to come to the breast. So I had so many things going on that I felt like my diabetes was bad, but I look back and it was all right. Like I was but getting.
Did you think it was bad because you'd had like such crazy control?
Yes,
during
that's pregnancy. It. And that's
suddenly
that's
like normal person control is bad control when it's not.
Exactly. So you're used to that pregnancy level of control, and then all of a sudden you don't have that pregnancy level of control, and you're back to the control that you had before you were thinking of getting pregnant when you were just like bumming around doing whatever. Now you're like, oh my God, that's not good enough, but it's fine. Like, my control is way worse these days. I think I check my blood sugar like once every 3 days at the moment, but that's something I'm working on.
I think also I recovery, like people just forget after you've had the baby that you're kind of existing. Like I found with my diabetes care, after being like hounded, like constantly, like 2, 3, 4 times a week for information and pump uploads and all this kind of stuff. And then my kids were born and then like I didn't hear boo from my diabetes team for a little while. And I think that was really hard for me to manage. And also like you, Ashley, it kind of really made me like I became like hypercritical of my diabetes when I shouldn't have been, because my diabetes was still doing really well. Like all things considered, I just had a baby and I was learning how to breastfeed and how that impacted my diabetes and how like how to treat the hypos that I got with. Like I think my diabetes now looking back was better controlled than it is now, let alone like me thinking it was the worst ever. The fact that I was no longer touching base with my people, I guess, didn't give me the reassurance that I had had during pregnancy. Like I had somebody like telling me 2-3 times a week, yep, you're doing a really good job here, let's make this micro change, you know, to this one background basal rate a day, like we'll make this 0.5 change or whatever. So having that time where like I was becoming a new, like learning how to be a new mum, because that's a thing you have to learn. Like I don't care who tells you like, oh, it's supernatural, like you're just gonna have your baby come out and like you're just gonna know what to do. Like sure, there were things that obviously became instinctive because there's a small crying human, you're not gonna leave them there, but like you have to learn how to be a mum. You don't wake up suddenly with like a mum brain. Like you have to learn to become a mum. And so learning that and then learning how to like care with Isabel in particular, I talk about here, how to care for a new human and how to re-care for myself. Because I guess I spent my whole pregnancy like focused on her and Noah, like focused on the inside person. I kind of forgot a little bit about myself, except for the crazy amount of diabetes care that I had to do. But like I didn't, wasn't really doing things for me. Everything from in my mind was a thought of how is it going to impact the baby?
Yeah.
Like what does eating this do? What does, you know, bolusing for this do? Like exercise here, blah, blah, blah. Like everything for me was about another person. So then relearning how to be me and be a mum and look after this new person and then manage my diabetes, which was way different than it's ever been before. Like I... like my hypo awareness has completely changed. Like that kind of stuff as well was stuff that impacted my diabetes. My postpartum impacted my diabetes that I also was like, what the hell is this? Like I used to be able to feel hypos like in the fives when I was going down. I could feel them way early. So I never really had to treat hypos because I could avoid them. Whereas I'd be sitting here doing something and suddenly I'm like, oh, my sugar's 2.1. When did that happen? Like, how did that happen? So relearning diabetes, a bit like you said, Ash, like it was a whole, it was re-diagnosed almost.
Yeah.
Like things impacted me differently than they had before. And I don't know, man, these kids take a lot out of you.
And when you add like sleep deprivation in?
Oh, shit.
Like, because you're waking up like every 2-3 hours when they're a newborn and then you're like, It's like diabetes is definitely affected by sleep. And so you just kind of like end up like peeing around.
Like, it's like that 40, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's that 42 factors that impact blood sugar. It's like a meme. I don't know if it's called a meme. It's a little picture. And it's like things like temperature, and it's like the night sweats that I used to get. I would go into hypos overnight because I was overheating. I don't know why I was overheating or why night sweats are a thing, but I was getting them, hypoing overnight. And like the anxiety that you ladies are talking about, like of not wanting to leave the house. And like, you know, actually, holy crap, the anxiety you were going through. Like anxiety impacts diabetes both positively and negatively in terms of blood sugars going up and down. And like exercise, getting my kids in the car was a bloody exercise. Like getting the bag packed and getting the pram in and getting the baby in, and like breastfeeding is an exercise. Like all this stuff that go, oh, you just eat well, you'll be right, just eat good stuff. It's like those 42 factors are crazily impacted within that postpartum period because so much is going on. Ashley with your sickness, and Rachel and I with like hormones, and you with hormones on top of sickness, like so many things. And it's like being re-diagnosed, like a brand new person.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I still feel like I'm changing my rates all the time because I have no idea. Like your body's just still readjusting. Like,
yeah. But and meanwhile, like while we're all here talking about diabetes, like Rachel's having hypo at the moment. So fun fact, everyone, like this is real life diabetes in real time. But yeah, so while Rachel is dealing with that, Ashley, how did you find, or what strategies may you have used to try and manage your diabetes in that time, or help manage your diabetes in that time?
Okay, so I was still using CGM then. I just want to point out that CGM ending at 3 months postpartum is really stupid.
Yep.
CGM not being available to all is really stupid.
It is really stupid. But, like, especially, like, you know, they're like, oh, like, who stops breastfeeding at 3 months postpartum? Like,
exactly.
Like, it's just insane to me anyway. So I guess I used the CGM while I had it, and I did try and stock up a little bit, but I've run out now. So I haven't been on it for a while. But I use the CGM, I guess, and I don't, honestly, I didn't really do much. Got to say, I just kind of winged every single day. Just winged it all. Just had lots of lollies and hypo things, and yeah. What about you?
I agree, and I also think it's really important to point out, like, it is okay just wing it for a bit.
Oh yeah.
And it's really hard to accept that when you've just gone through 9 months or longer, like if you've been trying to conceive for a while or things, like minimum 9 months of like tied up control.
Yeah.
And like having to micromanage yourself or having a team micromanage you. It is really hard to just accept that like, you know, a high blood sugar is okay. Like it's just, it is what it is. And it is just super important to know that it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
And your baby's out. Like, I know high blood sugars long-term are not good for anybody, but, like, if you've overtreated a hypo, not going to ruin your life, even though it feels like it, because if you overtreated a hypo during pregnancy, it was like, holy crap, quick, I need to correct. Like, I can't have this, like, crazy times. But what about you, Rachel, now that you're, like, feeling slightly better?
Yeah, now I've just stuffed my face with jelly beans. Anyway, yeah, like you guys, I think I was hypervigilant with my, like, I was overcritical of my diabetes postpartum. I think, excuse me, I think it stemmed from what was happening with my mental health as well. I was grasping for things that I could control. And I was like, yeah, my diabetes, I've got this. I've had diabetes for 24 years. I can figure this out. But no, because as you guys have said, it's like you're being re-diagnosed because your diabetes takes on forms and patterns and things that don't stick. And what will work 1 week won't, and things like that. And I think that lack of control that I had on my diabetes during that time really impacted my mental health. Quite a bit when I was trying to use it as something to be like, here's evidence of something that I can do well. And well, in hindsight, it was actually okay given everything that I was dealing with. And as you guys say, you just do what you have to do to survive. But I am, again, incredibly thankful I had access to CGM during that time, because like Kylie, my hyper awareness just went out the window. And while I was figuring out pumping and feeding and all of that and lack of sleep, my levels just were a roller coaster for a while of highs and lows with, you know, no straight lines anywhere. So, I think you can't really expect much from your diabetes because it just takes on an entirely new form. I feel like this is like Dragon Ball Z and your diabetes is like one of those characters. You know how they have the episodes, there's like a character and they're fighting one of like the good guys, but then like the bad guy is like changing forms. So you're like, oh, you haven't defeated him yet because now he's evolved into like this extra
guy. Brother-in-law like would love this. Brother-in-law to a T. Dragon Ball Z nut.
Yeah. So diabetes, this isn't even its final form kind of thing. Yeah.
I also want to point out when we're talking about CGM, so I've done one pregnancy with self-funded CGM because the subsidy didn't exist when I had Belle. Wasn't a thing. And obviously we all know the impact CGM has on diabetes and management, especially during pregnancy and postpartum. But what else is super important? The financial burden not being on you. Yes. Like, I labored because it was the cheapest form of not CGM, because we know it's flash glucose monitoring, not continuous, but it was the cheapest option that I had. But still, like, it's still like hundreds of dollars. Like, it's not like it was a $20 down at the chemist. Like, it was still hundreds of dollars. And I was very lucky with Noah that the subsidy came in to effect when I was, I think, maybe 10 weeks pregnant. Or maybe when I was 8 weeks, and I got it when I was 10 weeks pregnant. And I was able to get a CGM for the first time because I had CGM before. I'd only had FGM. And like the cost of Dexcom is astronomical compared to Libre. Mm-hmm. And the cost of the Guardian, which I then moved to after that, is even more so. And I think that that's a really big factor that comes into like managing diabetes post-pregnancy is the financial burden of it.
Yeah. And when you're on reduced pay.
So yeah, exactly.
You're taking maternity leave, so you've not got a good income coming in. Like, let's be honest, the government's maternity pay is shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It is nothing. Like, yeah. So you're working with reduced pay and then you've got to pay out to get CGM, which is beneficial for you as a mum with wacky hormones and wacky diabetes so that you don't, like, die.
So it's just crazy, but I think it's a factor that a lot of, like, and I say this like with as much love as possible, but a lot of people who, like, society as a big paintbrush I'm using here just don't realize. Like, when, like, I've had to explain the CGM fall fight to people at the moment in regards to the impact it had on my pregnancies and how they were different when I had access to CGM versus FGM. They're like, oh, but you're getting a subsidy. And I'm like, but you don't understand. Like, it's not just the subsidy that's a thing, because what Ashley said, what happens at 3 months when it's done? Like, Ashley, you needed it more than 3 months because you'd barely gotten your life back together after 3 months. Like, and it's obviously a man who's never had a baby and probably doesn't have diabetes.
Yeah.
Has decided that, 3 months postpartum, that's it. That's the right time. That's the perfect amount of time for a woman to have a CGM. And if she hasn't got together by then, well, then it's her own problem. So I think it's just super important, because also that stress then impacts your diabetes even more. Full circle. Well, this was like super heavy in some areas. Like, I'm just pretty much nothing I said was super heavy. But I just want to appreciate the two of you for being very candid about some things tonight. And also for just a reminder, we are going to go into the strictly mental health postpartum episode in a few weeks' time, where Ashley and Rachel are going to go into a bit more detail about the things that they experienced and the way that they dealt with that, because they're awesome. And it's really important information that is as forthcoming as it should be from the people that it should be forthcoming from, i.e., healthcare professionals. So anyway, thank you so much for tonight, ladies. It was so good to see you, hear you both again. It's been such a long time since we've all been together. And I hope that you guys are okay. after all.
Yeah. All good. And on a lighter note, yeah, on a lighter note, we should send out a final reminder for everyone to keep up their pelvic floor exercise.
Yeah, man. Woo, woo, woo.
Yeah, like I know I said that I peed myself afterwards, but it might have been worse if I hadn't done my pelvic floors. So still do your pelvic floors.
You could have like peed yourself every time you did with your second pregnancy, because that's like well fun at work. So good. So fun. All right. Oh, and buy yourself some of those like period undies.
Period undies. I live in those because I'm like, just in case I pee myself, I better put my period undies on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well worth it. All right, ladies. Thank you so much.
Thanks, ladies. Thanks for joining us for another week of Mama Beanies. Make sure you subscribe to us wherever you listen to your podcast so you never miss an episode, and leave us a review so that others can find us too. Remember to follow us on Facebook, just search Mama Beanies, Twitter at Mama Beanies, or on Instagram at MamaBeanies_podcast. To reach out, please email us at mamabeanies.podcast@gmail.com. If during this podcast series you feel you need to reach out for additional support, please contact your usual treating team, Panda's National Perinatal Anxiety and Depression Helpline on 1300 726 306, or Lifeline on 13 11 14 outside of Panda's operating hours.